Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Today's topic is bisexuality. And no, this is not the Oprah Williams show, Oprah Winfrey show, or the Montel Williams show. Sometimes I guess I conflate the two. No, you haven't turned into Ricky Lake or Jerry Springer. Frankly, I don't have the bouncers in the studio to get rid of people who would hit each other over the head with chairs. And yet, when you hear bisexuality, that's where a lot of people's minds go. In an era where gay men and lesbians are achieving increasing tolerance, if not complete acceptance, in our nation's society, at a time when putting a gay couple or a lesbian couple on Jerry Springer would get no ratings because it's too boring, it's too common. The only question is whether they can marry like the rest of America, and there's pretty much nothing more state or conservative than the institution of marriage. That's been around for centuries. And yet, bisexuals still are treated somehow like a circus, like a minstrelsy show. You know, it's interesting to me that I think that most Americans' contact with the idea of bisexuality comes in these lurid environments. And I don't want to do a show like that today. I want to talk in detail about what bisexuality is, where it comes from, and why it threatens, why bisexual people threaten not just straight people, but gay people too. What is the politics of bisexuality? How does it affect how we think about people who want to marry of different genders, of the same genders? Is there a difference between a closeted gay person, a closeted bisexual person? Does it matter whether it's a man or a woman? Are there differences there? And at a time when the only news we hear really about gay people is closeted gay people like Jeff Gannon or a woman like Maya Keyes, who was disowned by her father, former Senate candidate and presidential candidate Alan Keyes, for being lesbian, when we hear mostly about the persecution, we're not hearing much about bisexual people themselves. And what's interesting to me is that we're finding out that throughout history, and this is just starting to come out in mainstream movies and culture, throughout history there are a lot of questions about the bisexuality of famous people. Recently, Oliver Stone's film Alexander the Great came out. Alexander the Great, of course, was a great general and a known bisexual. There are questions about Abraham Lincoln's sexuality and also those of Alfred Kinsey, really the person who developed these first theories. So I want to discuss in detail about, well, who bisexuals are, what is their political role, and how is our concept and understanding of bisexuality changing. My guest is John Craig. Now, he's a master's in social work. He attended my alma mater, Yale. But most importantly, what he does is he does group therapy with men and women who are coming to grips with their bisexuality. And you really couldn't meet a better expert. So if you have questions, all you have to do is call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. John, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark, for having me on your very interesting and provocative program.
Well, we're going a little bit of direction different from normally. I'm there, I'm criticizing the Bush administration or some member of Congress for doing something wrong. And here, I think there are political dimensions, but before I get to them, I want to talk about the social dimensions of bisexuality. Let me start with whether you agree with my premise, and feel free to disagree, that at a time when America is increasingly beginning to understand gay men and lesbians, bisexuality is a topic that's still not up much for discussion.
I'd say you're right about that. I guess there's not very much visibility of bisexual individuals and a lot of misunderstanding around the issue.
I remember when Anne Heche was dating Ellen, and then she went back to men. Now, Anne Heche may well be crazy. She was actually found on a porch muttering to herself. So the woman herself may be crazy, but the idea that for Anne Heche or someone like her, it really was a choice whether to be sexually oriented towards women or men, I think put off a lot of straights and gays.
Well, I think you're right. I think that There are certainly people who are exclusively homosexual. Certainly there are people who are exclusively heterosexual. But if you look at the ancient world, you were just talking about Alexander the Great. You know, in ancient Greece and Rome, it was almost assumed universally that most people, men and women, would have both heterosexual feelings and homosexual feelings at various times in their lives. So there's much more of a mixture there than most people would imagine. The same kind of conclusions were drawn by Alfred Kinsey when he did his research in America in the late 30s and 1940s, finding that homosexual feelings in males and females were a lot more widespread than anyone had imagined. And the same kinds of conclusions were drawn by anthropologists like Margaret Mead. You know, they studied cultures all over the world and found that homosexuality was very often, you know, a widespread part of the sexual lives of in various cultures.
John, I wonder if it's precisely that concept that there's a lot of bisexuality going around, if it's not talked about, that many men and women of all sexual orientations have had sexual fantasies about men and women, that may be exactly what makes it the most threatening. I'll give you an example, and I tend to think in political terms, but sometimes you find people, liberals, for example, attacking more often their fellow liberal for disagreeing a slight bit than someone who's way conservative, who they just write off as a wacko. And same is true on the right. You find conservatives attacking each other sometimes more than liberals because it's so close. I know that there are a lot of straight men who can handle the idea of a gay man, and they put a very strong stereotype, and you have stereotypical shows, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. You know, the gay guy is a very particular stereotype, and the straight man sees he's not like that stereotype, so he has no problem with gay men. But then you come up with a bisexual man, someone who is more similar to the straight man, and that can be very threatening.
Well, it can be, and you know, there is actually a tradition in America of what you might call a bisexual orientation or bisexual activities. If you look at, for example, and this is in very heterosexual circles I'm talking about, look at the college fraternities, for example. The initiation rituals there are notoriously secret and also notoriously oriented towards some kind of homoerotic activities. These are often sort of ritualistic homosexual activities.
Well, let's talk about some examples. You and I both went to Yale. Neither of us were a member of Skull and Bones, but both George Bush and John Kerry were a member of that secret society. Is that kind of activity go on there?
Well, there, I think it does, and there's a book out on Skull and Bones that's quite interesting. I can't remember the exact title, but the young woman who wrote it used to write for The New Yorker, and she researched Skull and Bones and found that, you know, they had some rituals like, you know, an initiate at midnight, probably drunk, would get naked into a coffin with the other fraternity brothers standing around and be required to masturbate in front of them. There's obviously a lot of homoerotic energy in that. Some people would laugh at this as foolishness, but there's actually, you know, a lot of powerful psychological bonding that occurs in that kind of situation. The other situation is, at least I went to a boys' school down south, and it was actually the guys who were considered probably most heterosexual, that is the football players or soccer players. They would go off for weekends and come back with stories of circle jerks, as they called it, you know, sort of a circled up ritualistic male masturbation situation. And so these are actually traditions in America of homoerotic activity. And, you know, there's a lot of complex psychological dynamics going on in these kinds of activities. But I think that as homosexuality becomes something that is more out in the open and discussed openly in society, suddenly there can be a threat with heterosexual men that, you know, some of these feelings that they manage to bury or dismiss as just, you know, minor forces in their lives you know, might come more to the surface and at least seem threatening to them.
You know, it's hard to talk about this issue without getting too graphic, and I apologize to those of my listeners who are offended by what they hear. But I guess that sometimes the truth, and most of my listeners are adults, the truth is sometimes graphic. And what's interesting to me is that it's precisely by making this thing secret, by not discussing any of this, I think that gives it some kind of raw power in people's memories and maybe even adds to fears. I don't know. Do you agree, John?
Sure. There's a lot of fear circulating here. But I think one of the most important things to see is that in society, the fear of homosexuality is being reduced daily simply by exposure to the truth about homosexuality. When there was so much secrecy, there was little information circulating, and now a lot more information is circulating through on the silver screen, through television, print media, wherever. So people are feeling more comfortable, and I think the bisexual feelings are going to come up as a topic more and more.
I'll tell you, though, I think it's interesting because I think that the threatening feeling for both straight and gay people towards some bisexuals is it's almost like the spy within. It's, you know, straight people assuming people are straight and then finding out, oh, someone could be oriented a different way, or vice versa, gay people presuming someone is gay and then finding out, oh, it's almost like they feel that there's a traitor in their midst.
Well, you have to look back and remember that back 50 years ago, say in the 1950s, many gay men and lesbians felt, and to some extent they were right, when they felt that, you know, gays and straights were enemies. There was a war going on. The heterosexual society was oppressive of homosexuality. And so in that situation, you know, gay and straight were enemies, and if you sort of crossed the line, you were seen as, you know, a double agent or a Benedict Arnold, something like that. And so, but really, let's face it, gays and straights are not enemies. And so now it's getting to the point where it will be safer for someone to acknowledge that he or she has both heterosexual and homosexual feelings, and there will probably be less of a harsh judgment as the years go by.
I'd like to talk about a specific example of, and I don't know whether they're bisexuals or closeted gay people, and maybe the line is very close here, but married people who, and it's usually men, who are married to a woman and are, well, having sexual affairs with men on the side. In the African American community, it's called on the down low. They even have a name for it.
Right.
And the down low fully suggests to me secrecy and shame and all kinds of things. Maybe and of course the other thing it does is if their wives don't know that they're bisexual, and particularly if they're sleeping around, and it actually leads to greater incidence of disease and AIDS and all kinds of things. What do you account for this, whether in the African-American community or outside, is this thing prevalent? Is it growing? What do you think?
I think that it will grow, and I think the down-low trend is the first sign that bisexuality and bisexual feelings are widespread, at least in the African-American community, but I would argue strongly they're in the white Hispanic community, wherever they're in the human community. It is a danger. Women need to get to the point where they can accept a radically different view of sexual orientation from the view they have been presented. The view many people believe in is the view that about 5 or 10% of men are gay and the rest are completely heterosexual. The truth is there is a bisexual dimension, I think, to the psychological makeup of most men. And what that means is that just about...
You're saying the majority of men are bisexual in some way?
In some way, yes. They have some homosexual component. Just as this was believed, again, this was widely believed and perceived in the ancient world, there was no question about it.
Now, some of this comes from Kinsey's studies, right, in the 50s?
Yes, Kinsey found this as well. And you got to remember, he found these feelings and behaviors were admitted to by men in the 30s and 40s, and those were decades when homosexuality was severely repressed, and still he came up with figures where there was a high incidence of homosexual activity and a high incidence of homosexual feelings among males. So now we have much less repression, and we're moving into, you know, years where there will be even where homosexuality will be even less stigmatized. So we're essentially opening the door to homosexuality, and so the feelings that a lot of men have that may have been unconscious in centuries gone by are no longer going to be held in the unconscious. They're going to come out and perhaps be acted on.
Well, there's a lot to talk about, both in regard to historical figures, people like Abraham Lincoln, Alexander the Great, and with regard to today. And I don't mean to in any way suggest that I'm confusing two very different principles. One is monogamy and one is bisexuality. Certainly bisexuals can be as monogamous as anyone else. But it's interesting that, and perhaps because of societal pressures, we do have, well, I don't know if it's societal pressures or not. We have people sleeping around in all kinds of communities.
That's right.
There's adultery in the straight community, the gay community, and the bisexual community. But for some reason, when it's a bisexual adultery, I don't know, people seem to get, they don't know what to do with it. It's a very, when we come back, and I want to throw out the phone numbers again, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can write on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. When we come back, I want to examine adultery, which is very common in our society. You know, half of all straight marriages end in divorce, and of the ones that stay together, we can assume that a proportion of those are include affairs. So, you know, we're talking about the majority of straight marriages. Certainly, gay couples are split up by affairs. But whether adulterous affairs that are bisexual are somehow of a different dimension, does it matter if your wife or husband is cheating with another woman or another man, or is it the same emotions? I want to get to all those questions and your calls at 877-57-SCOOP right after these messages.
How far would you let a boss push you? Maybe your boss keeps refusing to raise your pay and also cuts back on your health care. Still, jobs are short these days and wages everywhere are low, so you stick it out. But what if the boss then has surveillance cameras put in to keep an eye on you at work and also requires drug testing on the job? This invasion of your privacy angers you, but you still need the job, so you shrug it off. But next, the boss wants to follow you out of the workplace and control what you do on your own time. If you do things after hours that do not conform to your boss's own particular beliefs, you're fired. Would you put up with that? Believe it or not, more and more bosses are insisting that they have the right to monitor and regulate the activities of employees off the job, even perfectly legal activities. Howard Wires is one such boss. He's honcho of WICO, an insurance management corporation in Michigan. Howard doesn't like smokers, so he has instituted an anti-smoking policy. Fine, except that Wires' policy outlaws smoking off the job as well as on. He has imposed random, mandatory breathalyzer tests on his 200 employees. Fail once, and you're fired. You work for me, Wires says. This is what I expect. You don't like it? Go someplace else. For Howard, a former football coach, it's a matter of making people better, more virtuous even. He says he used to hone his football players mentally and physically, and he says, I think that's what we need to do in the workplace. Excuse me, Howard, but who elected you our nanny? If he can be the no-smoking dictator, other bosses can dictate that employees can't have a beer after work, must go to a particular kind of church on Sunday, or can't have a Democratic bumper sticker on their cars. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight back, call the National Work Rights Institute, 609-683-0313.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac. about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're taking a topic that has political dimensions but also has extreme social dimensions. The topic is bisexuality. And if you want to call in, the lines are open. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. My guest is John Craig. He's a social worker who's done extensive group therapy with men and women coming to terms with their bisexuality. And we were talking before the break about, well, men or women, a lot of them are men, that are in marriages but are cheating on the side with someone of the same sex. Again, I do not mean at all to suggest that all bisexuals do this. But it was interesting to me, or even most, by the way, but it was interesting to me that when Governor Jim McGreevy was discovered to have had an affair on the side, and of course his affair involved some political issues, which I don't need to go into here. But instead of coming out as bisexual, this is a man who's married with children, he came out as gay. And it's interesting, almost, I wonder why he did that. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on that, John?
Well, it seems to me that today, if you are considered gay, that's very acceptable to a great many people. But the word bisexual is still very much electrically charged in our society. And Jim McGreevy is a very astute politician. He certainly wanted to have sympathy as he stepped out of the governor's office and as he revealed his homosexual affair. So, in my view, he is probably, to some degree at least, bisexual, and yet was very smart to call himself gay. And that way he earned sympathy because people saw him as a victim, you know, of the pressures of society. He was so pressured in his younger days to conform to the heterosexual norm that he suppressed all of his feelings and just went in the heterosexual direction when, in fact, he was totally gay. I think probably he was mostly gay but had a very distinct heterosexual component as well, and this is what really allowed him to be married twice and have actually, I think, what were probably pretty good relationships with his wives, at least at different times.
Well, let me ask you a question I have from the blog here. This is from Nathan, and Nathan asks, is this supposedly a subconscious feeling that most men have homosexual tendencies, or do these men just keep it a secret?
Well, I think there's a whole range there as well. I think some men are exclusively heterosexual, actually. Many men have some homosexual feelings in spite of the fact that they are mostly heterosexual, and yet these homosexual feelings they have are repressed in the unconscious and completely out of their awareness. Other men are mostly heterosexual but have some homosexual feelings that they are quite aware of and have been aware of since probably their adolescent days, but they don't talk about these feelings, maybe just to a few trusted friends, but no one else.
You know, there's so many societal pressures. I can think of like either Saturday Night Live episodes or a whole number of movies where you have two straight men and they're having a meaningful moment together. They're bonding. They hug or fall asleep on each other. You see this in Friends episodes, and then suddenly they discover they've done this. They get incredibly embarrassed, and it's a very clear rule never to talk about it again. And people laugh. They think it's funny, presumably because that's something that's common in people's experiences.
Right. Well, I think it is, and I think humor is a way. You see these episodes of Friends or other comedy skits where homosexuality is touched on in that way. Heterosexual men are bonding closely, as you say, or touching, And the humor is a way to explore these very these feelings that cause a great deal of anxiety. But with humor, of course, we can go into these feelings and kind of laugh it off, but we still get to explore what's going on and sort things out a little bit.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. John, are women more free in our society to express emotion and feelings toward each other than men?
Well, I'd say so. I think most people feel it's that way. You know, you go down to the disco and you'll often see women dancing together. You don't really assume at all that they're necessarily lesbian. It's just a couple of women out to have some fun and dance. Guys can't do the same thing. Women are notorious for sharing their feelings with each other. Men are more likely to just share a beer and a football game on TV. So, but this may be changing because I think there's a lot of emotional pressure on men these days, on everybody, but that includes men. And relationships are breaking down with the threat of AIDS and HIV and other diseases. Women are certainly much less likely to jump into a sexual relationship with a man. So I think a lot of men, you know, they're having a harder time, and divorce rates are high. So there's a lot of pressure, and I think a lot of men are seeking out male friends to bond with and have an outlet for emotional expression that maybe in decades gone by they didn't have.
John, I would bet that a number of the listeners now, particularly the men, are sort of cringing. I can see it even in Nathan's question when he says, is this supposedly a subconscious feeling that most men have homosexual tendencies? What he's saying, at least as I read it, is, you know, we don't believe you, that it isn't true, it's not that common, and I don't want to talk about it.
Well, you know, I've got to say a couple of things. This is a very important issue. One is that Sigmund Freud was started such a firestorm of controversy a century ago, partly because he insisted that all of us have feelings, in fact, very strong drives and feelings that we are completely unaware of. They're in our unconscious. Most people like to think that they know themselves. But, you know, I'm the first to step forward to say there's a lot of things about myself I probably don't understand, a lot of feelings inside I haven't figured out or sorted out or even identified. But that's hard for most of us to accept. The other thing is that I think is very important here is that our society has more or less defined male homosexuality as something that is necessarily effeminate. It's the weaker, more delicate side or more sensitive side of the male psyche. But if you look in the ancient world, homosexuality is most often associated with a sort of hyper-masculine activity. The warriors of Sparta, Alexander the Great, homosexuality was not just part of his life, but it was widespread among his class, the ruling class, the warrior class in his Macedonian society. So what's going to happen here in the next 10 years, I think, is that the other side of male homosexuality is going to emerge. That's the more masculine, aggressive side. And as that happens, the perception of homosexuality among men is going to change dramatically because you will start to see football players, basketball players, and other sports stars, for example, highly successful, very masculine, very aggressive, and they're going to declare their homosexuality or bisexuality. And I think it's a different kind of relationship. I think most men think, oh, I couldn't be even partly gay because I'm not effeminate. I don't want to be a hairdresser or a interior decorator or a ballet dancer. It's just not my style. Therefore, there's no homosexual feelings in me. But that's just one side of homosexuality. It is a definite side of homosexuality.
It's interesting, though, that the sports is sort of the last refuge of prejudice. It's very common now to know gay men, lesbians who are doctors and lawyers and engineers and teachers. Now rock stars, Melissa Etheridge was one of the first to come out as lesbian, and now it's generally accepted there are a lot of rock stars that are gay men or lesbian. But sports, interesting, women's sports, Martina Navratilova, I mean, it's sort of okay to be a lesbian woman in sports, but it's almost like you said, football, basketball, baseball. These are some of the last refuge. I know that when Billy Beane came out in baseball a few years back, he was completely shunned by everyone. And is that because of this fear of seeing this very macho sport being corrupted in some sense?
Well, I think my own opinion is that it's in arenas where there actually are some significant but buried homosexual feelings. Those are the areas where there's most resistance to homosexuality. And again, if you want to take a look at the Olympics, who are the people who created the Olympics? It was the ancient Greeks 2,500 years ago.
And they were naked, as I recall, in the Olympics.
The word gymnasium means wrestling naked or training naked. And there was a homoerotic element to all those sports events. So, you know, this is an area where in the past, when there were no, you know, in the ancient past, where there were no restrictions on homosexuality, homosexuality was commonplace. So if we are moving back into a society where the restrictions on homosexuality are lifted, we may very well be heading back to, you know, a time when homosexual relationships among men can be much more widespread. And this is, it's fearful because even though we're moving into more enlightened times, the fears of the past are still with us.
We got to take another break. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. When we come back, I want to ask John Craig about his group therapy, about some of the things that the people that he helps are saying, some of the things perhaps that's going on in his own life. When do people discover that they are bisexual, and how does it affect their daily lives? If you want to call in, I want to encourage you to do so. I think people are a bit afraid of this topic, but there's no need to be. No question is a stupid question. Toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can write into the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
The other day.
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me.
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you on, some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical health, and then there's financial health. With ScorePower from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score. All for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. ScorePower at Equifax.com.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. ScorePower.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know and that the mainstream media doesn't report. And there's been surprisingly little discussion of bisexuality. Today, the media is full of talking about the rights of people of the same sex to get married. But again, it's generally assumed in both straight and gay communities that these are two separate communities and there's nothing in between. And yet, we're starting to see, I don't know, there's like this little band of girls called Tatu, I think from Russia, where we have these amorphous young girls that could be gay or straight. Or it's almost like the youngest community is starting to understand that, well, people can love who they want to love and there shouldn't be any rules. Not only is it not just straight and gay, but there shouldn't be any rules at all. And my guest is John Craig. He has a master's in social work. He does a lot of group therapy for people coming to grips with their bisexuality. And I guess my question for you, John, is in these therapy sessions, what kinds of things are people saying? What is their confusion? What is their trouble?
Well, first I'd say, Mark, that although I am trained as a psychotherapist, the groups I conduct are mostly more like on the coaching model or the counseling model.
Okay.
Discussion groups.
Okay.
In other words, it used to be years ago that anyone with homosexual feelings thought there was a real problem with them and maybe to cure that problem. But today, of course, it's not that. It's the fact that it's still hard to adjust and make decisions about your life. And to do that well, it's very helpful to have a forum where you can discuss with others in private what's going on in your life and how you can make the best decisions.
Are most of these people married or single, young, old, or all ranges?
There has been a range. A lot of the men in my program, which is called themaleexperience.com, have been, say, over 35 or 40 in midlife, and sometimes they've just, in their earlier days, were aware of their homosexual attractions, but thought, well, I've also got a lot of heterosexual attractions, and if I act on those heterosexual feelings and get married and have kids, the homosexual side of me will disappear. That doesn't really happen. And so sometimes in midlife, they look back and say, well, what were those feelings? Or what did those feelings mean? Or those feelings are reemerging. There's a whole range. I have men who have been completely monogamous, are determined to remain completely monogamous. That's the way they want to live their lives, but they still want to explore, at least on a discussion level, what are these feelings? What do they mean? How do they figure into my spiritual life or my emotional life? Other men have, in fact, you know, had relationships on the side. Most of the men in my groups, if they've done that kind of thing, have been extremely careful. They certainly are very protective of their own health and the health of their wives. And so, but you do have that going on, just like you have that going on in the heterosexual world.
It's interesting, you're talking a lot about men, and it may be because your sessions are private. It's been my experience, and I'd be curious if you share it, that I've met a lot of bisexual women in my time on all walks of life. I've met relatively few men who say openly, yes, I'm bisexual. I've probably met 10 times the number of women who say they're bisexual as men. That may just be my experience, but it seems to me that society is much more accepting of women that say they're bisexual than men.
I think you're right, and that one reason this might be true, Mark, is because if you'll take a look back at the women's movement, you will find that lesbians and women in the women's movement were helping each other and cooperating with each other and supporting each other. And yet, if you look on the male side of the equation, gay men and straight men were poles apart. There wasn't much help. In some cases there was, but a lot of times it was just fear and animosity. So I think bisexual women felt that they were in a community of both straight and gay women who would support them, and they have felt freer about acknowledging who they really are.
I'm sure there's a lot of truth to that. Let me add another element that I don't know. I think when straight men think of lesbians, they often get a rush. There's sort of a psychosexual thing. You hear the straight male fantasy, the greatest fantasy is two women or three women.
Right.
And I think that for a man to find out that his girlfriend is also bisexual, that could even be a plus for some straight men. Whereas if a woman were to find out her boyfriend is bisexual, that would be a real turnoff. And I wonder if that's because, you know, we have a society that's male dominated, and so sort of the view of straight men rules.
Well, it could well be true, and I think the website lesbian.com is not for lesbians, it's a XXX site for straight males. So there is this dynamic going on. Perhaps part of it is the fact that when women consider that their husband or boyfriend might be bisexual, the issue of HIV transmission immediately jumps in. But when males may think, well, that a girlfriend or wife has had an experience with another woman, that's not a route for HIV transmission generally.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. I want to move on to the political dimensions of this. This is a political show because we're finding a couple things going on. We're finding increasing pushing for couples of the same gender to be able to get married on an equal basis with straight couples. At the same time, we're finding that some of the ways that conservatives are fighting back against gay people is through promoting something called the ex-gay movement. And what they're doing is trying to say, oh, hey, being gay is a choice because, hey, look at these people. They used to be gay and now they're straight. Discounting the possibility entirely that maybe they're just bisexual. They were with a gay partner and now they're with a straight partner. But in a sense, bisexuals are being used in the political sphere by both sides, particularly I think by the right wing, to say it is a choice. Look, bisexuals can choose, and therefore we can't have gay role models because my kid, they're not really saying this, but thinking subconsciously, my kid might be bisexual, and therefore if there's a gay role model, my kid might choose to be gay, and I want to make my kid be straight.
Well, Mark, this is a very highly charged issue. I think it's going to be an issue that's going to grow a lot. I do think that most gay men and women are actually totally gay, and they are not in any position to choose. What I think is happening, though, is that a large percentage of the population actually is primarily heterosexual, but still have a very distinct homosexual component that has been repressed. That's not going to be repressed in the future, and I think this is something that the gay lesbian community is completely failing to see in the future. And there's a danger here, and it needs to be acknowledged. For example, when you take young males in late adolescence or in their 20s, they are very rebellious often. They could care less what their parents think. They're concerned about what their peers think. They're highly charged sexually. They're often, you know, drinking a lot, maybe too much, and I urge them to be more cautious with those things. And if they arrive in a situation where, say, rock stars and others start to embrace bisexuality, as has been the case often with rock stars in the past or other teenage stars, they may think, well, why don't I experiment with this? And I'm not talking about the ones who are going to be gay and who are on their way to being gay because that's what they really are. I'm talking about just your mainstream young men. And
is there a problem with this, with people experimenting sexually with people of both sexes?
Well, I urge caution to everyone entering into any kind of sexual relationship. I say go slow, be careful, be monogamous. But still, a lot of young people are going to act more quickly, and I think there could be a lot of young people being endangered this way, and especially in a society where, you know, we don't acknowledge bisexuality. So a lot of these young people, they know they're attracted to the opposite sex, so they think, well, I'm basically straight. This is just something I'm sort of doing on the side for fun. But you can do things on the side for fun and still be infected with some kind of disease. So
true, but people can have safe sex with people of both genders.
Absolutely. I think so. But the reason we need to talk about this is because I've worked in HIV prevention, and what you find is that if young people are more relaxed about who they are and not under a lot of pressure, they can behave responsibly if they do experiment with sex. On the other hand, if they are highly repressed and feel shamed about certain feelings, they may rely on alcohol or other drugs to release them from that feeling of shame, and suddenly on a Saturday night, you know, at 2 a.m. someplace, they get very drunk and have sex, but it's not safe sex.
Good point. Let me go to some of my callers who are hanging on the line. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and John Craig.
This is Ed from New York.
Hi, Ed.
I have a couple questions for John.
Hi, Ed.
The first thing, and they sort of relate to each other. The first question is, are more bisexuals in the closet than either straights or gays? And related to that, how does the military treat the issue of bisexuality along with its don't ask, don't tell?
Good questions. Thank you, Ed. John, let's start with closeted.
Ed, I think that you're exactly right. Most people who have some mixture of heterosexual and homosexual feelings are very much in the closet. And if you take a look at the reason why, it becomes clear. Take a young man who knows that he's attracted to young women, but he also knows he's sometimes sexually attracted to the other guys that he knows. Is he going to come out and say, hey, I've got a bisexual dimension to my psychological makeup, or I'm partly bisexual? Of course not. In the first place, he could lose a lot of his male friends who are going to instantly assume he's totally gay, or even if they believe he's bisexual, they may not want to hang out with him or hang out with him in the same way. The young women may think, wow, he's really gay. I don't want to go out with him, or maybe he's exposed to HIV.
So what's interesting is that you believe that bisexuals are more likely to be closeted than even gay people.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Now, how does this affect the military at all?
Well, in the military, I would say that, you know, again, you got a lot of young men. They're sexually charged. If you look at the ancient world, there's a lot of homoerotic feelings that were manifest there and clear and out in the open. I think a lot of those feelings are circulating either unconsciously or semi-consciously among a lot of young men, including those who go into the military. And yet, that is an area where, of course, it's even more taboo than in mainstream society.
You lose your job, you're thrown
out,
you get a dishonorable discharge, so it's even more dangerous for them. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and John Craig.
Yeah, it's your California fan club, Mark.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Really great. John, you're talking to a fellow shrink. It's been my experience that most males in our culture are very much threatened by their sexuality and in denial greatly. And I think it goes back to the fact that kids are often very unkind to one another. They reject each other over somebody being too tall or too short or wearing glasses or whatever. So
right.
Being gay
right.
is an ideal source of rejection. But, you know, what's significant at this moment is that it appears that this is coming out big time in our White House. And how is that going to set with all of our homophobic right-wing folks?
Are you talking about Jeff Gannon, Dave?
Yes, but I think it's also McClellan and Rove and whatever else that's at least that I don't know how much it is, but it appears that he was not in there because he did so well as a reporter. He was in there because he scored with some of the White House higher ups.
Well, there are rumors to that effect. I've seen them on the blog. I haven't seen any clear-cut evidence on that, so I don't want to say that I have, because I haven't, but there's definitely speculation.
He got into the White House on his $200 an hour talent.
Yeah, there's speculation that a male prostitute like Jeff Gannon, who got a daily White House pass every single day, even before he was listed on the propaganda site, Talon News, may have some friends in the administration and some friends that are intimate friends. Do you have a comment on Jeff Gannon, John?
Well, I would like to say, Dave, that's a very astute observation. And, Mark, I'd like to generally address not only Jeff Gannon, but the entire issue of male power and homosexuality. Again, if you look back to the ancient world, figures like Julius Caesar, Alexander the Great, they were involved in homosexual relationships. They were looking to homosexual relationships as a form of mentoring and increasing their male power, their status in society, because there are some very powerful dynamics that go along with male bonding and...
I know the Greeks taught that the highest form of love was between men, and that women basically, and it was somewhat misogynistic, there's no question about it, it was somewhat anti-women, but that women were basically used for breeding purposes, but that the higher, more purer form of love was between men.
Well, that's part of it, and there's just, a lot of psychological dynamics are going on for male empowerment with close male relationships. Now, the intensity of the relationship, it doesn't have to be sexual, but if it's intense, there's no faster way to the top than through mentors. Mentors, an older male figure, can open doors for you and get you into the circles where you need to be and introduce you around. And the sexual nature, you know, of male bonding, it's either unconscious or overt. And so I think that's at work here. I also think, Mark, that this is consciously or unconsciously what's going on with the download trend. Look at African-American males. They are jailed so often and so often unfairly. They are left out of the power circles. They are on the move for empowerment. And I think unconsciously they understand that intense male bonding is a way of solidifying their masculine identity and becoming stronger and more aggressive maybe in their lives. That gets them to the top.
You know, you mentioned male mentoring as a way to get to the top. There's also no faster way to get to the top in just about any profession than sleeping with your boss. It's not something people like to talk about it.
Right.
They talk a little bit about it more in Hollywood than elsewhere. But I think we've all seen in the workplace countless examples of people who got their job not based on their skills but based on who they're sleeping with. And I guess I'll throw it out to you. Do you believe Jeff Gannon is sleeping with someone at the White House?
Well, I really don't know, and I haven't followed this story closely enough, but I think that in conservative, if you read David Brock's book, Blinded by the Right, he talks about a lot of the closeted homosexuals in the right wing, and, you know, it's certainly not uncommon there just because it's not talked about.
Do you have any further questions or comments, Dave? Dave? Oh, well, thank you very much for your call. I want to ask you about some famous closeted gay people. I don't know whether they're gay or bisexual. One of the most famous is J. Edgar Hoover. Again, I'm not quite sure whether he was gay or bisexual or just liked to dress in women's clothes, but it's striking to me that a man of that extreme power, a man who's head of the FBI, who was spying on everybody, including Martin Luther King and others, had his own secrets to hide. And I'm curious if you could comment on him and on generally the problem of having people with these kinds of secrets in high places.
Well, that is a problem. But I think, again, one of the dynamics here may be that young men who feel homosexual attractions, especially in decades gone by, would feel that society was telling them that they were inferior. They were no good. They would never be winners. They would never get to the top. And to compensate for that, often they would hide those feelings and go on, steer their lives in the direction of getting absolutely to the very top. They sought out power and status and position in society to compensate for these negative feelings. And I think Hoover was probably in that category. You know, he knew he had these homosexual feelings, and to sort of get revenge, so to speak. He made it up to the top. And a lot of these people can be very ruthless as they move upward.
There are interesting political questions of all of this. Before 1992, before Bill Clinton was president, it was illegal if you were gay or presumably bisexual to have a security clearance. And the view was, prior to Bill Clinton, that if you were gay, that someone could blackmail you, and therefore you shouldn't have access to America's secrets. Bill Clinton came to the logical conclusion that being gay is not a threat at all, or even being bisexual. The threat is if you're closeted. If you're closeted and you have something to hide, yes, then blackmail really is a threat. Maybe that is a danger. And there's still, I know I've had a friend that got a security clearance, and they went around and asked me about him, and they said, is there anything he could be blackmailed with? And there wasn't. But the point is that seems to be a legitimate question. Can someone be blackmailed? Part of the fear of Jim McGreevy or others, or Jeff Gannon for that matter, is that they could be blackmailed and therefore controlled. Whereas someone who's very open about their sexual orientation, they got nothing to hide. There's nothing anyone has on them. So Clinton, I think, was very right to get rid of that security clearance. And the irony is that in our military today, we have a policy that encourages blackmail. In other words, if people were allowed to be openly gay in the military, they could go, they could fight, they could do their job, they could be promoted if they did a good job and fired if they did a bad job, but they can't be blackmailed by someone who wants the nation's secrets. But because of the policy that excludes gay people, it's actually a security risk to the United States, because people are required to hide their sexuality and actually are therefore more open to being blackmailed.
Well, I think you're exactly right, and I think Clinton was right. And the more we move into a society where people can be open about who they are, it's going to be better for everybody all around. I think you're going to find, ironically, that most closeted gay and bisexual people are going to be on the right wing, because that's a much more conservative arena, and there's more prejudice there. On the more liberal side, they can be completely open and still move upward.
Let me be clear, and I don't mean to out anyone, and I won't on this broadcast, but I worked in Congress for several years, and let me make it absolutely clear. It is an open secret on the Hill. Several members of Congress are gay and have not come out, gay or bisexual. Some of them are married and have not come out. And I know of two senators, and I know of at least five representatives, and interestingly, all but one are Republican. And I think they're the ones that are least likely to come out. But everyone on the Hill knows it. People in Congress know it. Staffs know it. It's common knowledge, and yet they feel they can't come out to their constituents. And what's interesting to me is that, of course, people on the left haven't played the kind of hardball people on the right have. And those that I'm thinking of, to the extent that they have been outed by right-wing sources rather than left-wing sources. I just want to throw that out there as someone who's been on the Hill. Do you think, John, that this is changing, that people are feeling more free to come out as gay and particularly as bisexual?
Well, I think so. And just take Dick Cheney's daughter and the way Dick Cheney himself was open about some of these issues on many occasions in the last year or two.
But he wasn't 4 years ago.
Right.
Years ago, she wasn't even allowed on the stage with him at the Republican National Convention.
Things are changing quite quickly, Mark. This is another thing I think is important. There's a book that's quite interesting called The Tipping Point. It's about how social trends will build slowly for a number of years and suddenly spike upward. A sudden change, a much more dramatic change, will take place. I think we've had 30 years of slow, steady change with regard to sexual orientation. But after sexual orientation, homosexuality goes up on the silver screen in the movies, on TV, and in so many other arenas, suddenly the change can be much more dramatic. And I think a lot of people are going to be coming out much more and more in the next few years.
Well, let me close then by actually going into you personally, if I could. I just to be clear to my listeners, I asked John before we came on air if I could delve into his personal life on air, because I didn't want to do it without his permission. He gave me permission. So let me ask you, John, in your own life, you are bisexual. Is that correct?
Yes, although sometimes I don't like to use that word.
Okay.
Because it's misunderstood.
What word would you use?
Well, I'm not sure, and I'm trying to struggle with that, because so often it's technically the right word, but it implies to many people that you are a sexual adventurer or you have ideas about free love and no rules, as I'm just on the opposite end of that. I'm very conservative. I advise others to be very conservative in their sexual lives.
Exactly. So you could be sexually oriented towards men and women and not act on those impulses at all.
Exactly. You could be monogamous and very strictly monogamous.
So let me ask you, if I could, and we only have about a minute left, to describe for me when you became aware of, I guess, both your feelings toward men and women.
It was very early, and I think with a lot of people it is. I was probably 8th, 9th, 10th grade. I was aware that, you know, I would have Playboy magazines. I was attracted to the women portrayed in those magazines. At the same time, I was in a boys' prep school and very much attracted to and emotionally attracted to other guys in my boys' school, so it was very early.
You know, a very close friend of mine is bisexual, and she was with a woman for about 7 years, monogamous, and now she is married to a man, and she's been with him for about 7-8 years. And she says that those of us that are straight or gay, we're strange. We're weird. We're weird to take half the human population and say that they're off limits. In her mind, if she finds someone that's attractive, she finds someone that's attractive, and she's not the physical things don't put her off. And she actually considers it a form of higher love. So I want to close with that idea. Think about it. Is it a form of higher love not to be put in one category where you're attracted to only one gender? Think about it. John, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark.
I appreciate your time. Tune in this Sunday at 1 o'clock p.m. for the Sunday Weekly Review. Tune in to AM 1200 or www.radioinsidescoop.com. This is Mark Levine signing off.